All right, welcome back for another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon, and Happy New Year, guys.
Yes, I'm Doug, and Happy New Year to you guys as well.
Man, as I said last episode, that people probably don't remember because I'm a little bit behind on posting, I'm going crazy again. Every year I find every movie I need to watch is 2 or 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And I had a lovely experience today about a film that we're not discussing in the show. It was only 1 hour 42. I was ecstatic.
Wow.
And I enjoyed it, and it was done, and it made sense, and I didn't feel it needed a 45-minute edit at any time. It'll be appearing on my top 10 list, is why I'm not mentioning it to people, so they have to tune in to find that out. But pleasant. Absolutely pleasant. So
wonderful.
Did you guys have a good New Year's? I mean, Kevin, you probably don't leave the house, so that didn't happen for you. But
no, I stayed home. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in bed by 9:30, so you know it was a very eventful New Year's for me. I will probably less eventful, but probably better than Jeremy Renner's New Year. I don't know if you guys have heard.
No, I have not. He, fired from Hawkeye.
No.
He had some kind of plowing accident, and he's in critical but stable condition at the hospital. So. Yeah.
Wow, needed a blood transfusion. Something ran over his leg.
Ouch!
Yeah.
Oh, awful.
Yeah, so he was losing blood and passing out, and from what I understand, he's had a transfusion. He's in stable condition, so.
Oh, I wish Jeremy Renner all the best. I love Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I even come back for Netflix. It's one of the few shows I enjoyed.
It was pretty good. He was great in it. So, but yeah. I haven't seen his other show, The Mayor of something.
Heisttown or something?
Yeah, I hear it's pretty good. But I don't know.
Okay, Kevin. You and Doug are like my TV guys.
Right.
I'm the movie guy on the show. You guys watch a lot more TV. So we don't do a top 10 TV show, but would you like to do it now?
I actually did prepare a top 10 list for my Facebook wall. I don't know if you guys have done anything like that for yourselves, but
I don't think I could even make 10 shows. I could do 5.
The problem is, of course, that I don't see everything, so it's only based on what I've seen, right? So, and we're always discovering new shows that are really good. So, I don't know. Doug, do you have something like that, or?
I have my top 5 favorite TV shows of 2022.
All right, I'll just do 5 of mine.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to do yours first, or?
Sure. Are we just going 5 to 1, and then?
Yeah.
Or are we going? Okay.
You can do some honorable mentions too if there's stuff that you like that you know didn't make your top 5.
Well, the one thing I will say, everybody's been telling me I have to watch Andor. I have not. I haven't watched any of the Star Wars shows, so that hasn't made my list, but it might. Honorable mention I will give to The Walking Dead. Ooh. It went from a show I despised, and then around seasons 4 or 5, around there, it's now become a comfort show. I've now watched it through all 11 seasons a couple times. Really? So, yeah, it's something I just put on at night and fall asleep to.
I stopped right around the time that Negan showed up. And then I meant to go back. I just have never gone back to it.
Okay. Yeah, that's when it rejuvenated itself for me. I actually really liked Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan. So.
Yeah, I mean, I heard good things about his performance. So, and he's a big fan too, right? So, to himself, so.
Yes, and actually he fits perfectly in with my number 5 show, because he'll be on season 4. My 5th show was The Boys season 3. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was absolutely excellent. Number 4 is a little scene show, and I just want to get the word out about it. The After Party, Season 1, on Apple TV. Lord Miller produced it. I think it was Miller who directed every episode, and every episode is a different genre. So there's an animated episode, a musical episode, an action movie episode. It's a brilliant series, and it's a whodunit mystery.
Oh, very cool.
My number three was Peacemaker season one. I just think that's the best thing James Gunn has ever done. Number two was The Righteous Gemstone season two.
Oh, I think
that show is absolutely brilliant. It's hysterical and actually has some of the better crime stories I've seen this year was on that season. And then my number one best show of the year was Better Call Saul season six.
The final
season, brilliant, start to end.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was caught up on Better Call Saul because I hear amazing things about the last season.
I'm
going to have to go back and dig into that. Great list. A lot of shows I want to watch there. Righteous Gemstones is on my list. After Party's on my list. There's a show called The Bear that I want to see that I hear good things about.
That
Severance.
The Bear was very good. I would highly recommend that. Each episode's only a half an hour. I thought it was another hour long. Each episode is half an hour, easy to digest.
I hear great things about Severance as well. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that. And then I still have to, I've watched seasons one and two of Jack Ryan this weekend. I'm going to finish season three probably tomorrow. So I hear good things about that one. It's action packed. So my top five, I start with a tie at number four, pretty much because they're pretty much similar shows, and they were both on your list, and that's The Boys season three and Peacemaker season one. Both are superhero comedies, action comedies taken to extreme levels of violence and sex and so forth. And Gunn does a great job with Peacemaker. And The Boys, I love The Boys. If I were to give one an edge, I'd probably go with The Boys, simply because the Homelander is just so unstable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's such a joy to watch because you don't know how he's going to react from scene to scene.
Mm-hmm.
Either he gets melancholy or he gets psychotic.
Yeah, Tony Starr is amazing in that role.
Yeah, amazing stuff. My number three was actually Stranger Things season four.
Okay.
Which I thought was a solid season. I was on my edge of my seat for all the episodes. Really big fan of the whole thing with the Vecna character, and kind of rejuvenated that series because it kind of got the last season was kind of dull. Not a big fan.
Yeah.
Of it.
I agree with Millie Bobby Brown. Actually, she says there's too many main characters. They need to start killing off some.
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, they keep adding new characters too. So it's like, now you have a stable of 20, but there were moments when they were fighting in the other world and then, they're fighting in Russia and they're fighting at home. And it's just all those stories were interlinked. And I thought this is really good. This is like, especially watching a Star Wars movie where all these stories are feeding off each other at the same time. Now speaking of Star something, my second number two show is Star Trek Strange New Worlds season one.
Okay.
Which I loved. I've not been a fan of New Trek. Enterprise, or what's the show?
Discovery.
Yeah, Discovery's not, I don't love Discovery. It's okay at times, but it's a little preachy. It's not fun, and it's not self-contained. And that's what Star Trek Strange New Worlds was. It's like a return to classic Trek stuff, and of original and new generation. Of each episode is unto itself. You may have arcs, character arcs over a few episodes, but each one is unto itself, and they encounter a new problem, everything that needs to be solved. And I gotta say, the cast is fantastic. Ethan Peck and, Anson Mount leading the cast are really good. But some new characters are already becoming fast favorites, like the girl that plays, Nurse Chapel, and the new girl that plays Uhura. They're all really good. And of course, number one. So number one, speaking of number one, is Star Wars Andor.
Okay.
Which I cannot say anything bad about this show. Other than maybe it starts off a little slow in the first episode. And that was a lot of people's complaint was they didn't know what it was. But it became a great, political drama. I guess so you could say.
Okay.
On the evils of totalitarianism and why the emperor was like why the empire was so bad. I mean, we never get a sense of it. We just know that they're there. You know, the sinister music plays, the stormtroopers, mm-hmm. They have the ships and all that stuff. But this is ground level. This is people dealing with the empire in their homes on an off world. And Andor he's a reluctant hero. He doesn't want to fight the empire. He just wants to survive and thrive in his own way, right? Okay. He takes a blind eye. He wants to find his sister. She's been missing since he was saved as a child. And we learn a little bit about his backstory, but each of the three or four story arcs, is like a mini movie. You know, like, the first he encounters, the corporate police and fights them and meets the rebel spy master. And then the second arc, he's in a plot to steal something from the empire. The third one, he's in prison. It's just each storyline is self-contained. And in the background, you have little political bits like Mon Mothma on Coruscant, dealing with the political stuff that she has to deal with. They're watching her as a person that's sympathetic to the rebel cause. They're obviously spying on her. And then watching her finances and all that stuff. And then there's the, Imperial, basically the spy division. We get to see what their internal workings are like. It's just really fascinating and probably the best thing to happen to Star Wars in a long time, because it's not Boba Fett riding on Rancor. So, you know, it's just, there's something to it other than just your action figures at play.
Nice.
I mean, and this is the promise of the first Star Wars as opposed to the later ones where it was just action.
Okay. Yeah, I will definitely have to give that a shot. Like I said, many people have been telling me Andor is amazing.
Yeah, totally.
And I should watch it.
Other shows I really liked, I did like The Crown this year. I liked the first season of Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon. Wednesday season one was really fun. And Tokyo Vice on HBO was the show I really liked.
That's when I got a... Because Michael Mann directed the pilot for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got
it. It feels like a Michael Mann show.
Okay.
And then I hear good things about House of the Lotus or something like that, or The White Lotus.
Oh, White Lotus. Yeah. I tried watching that, and I'll be honest, none of the characters... I didn't like any of them, so I didn't want to continue watching. So,
okay.
But that's just my opinion, and I'm probably way in the minority because people love that show.
Plus, Only Murders in the Building was really good.
Yes, that was great.
Guillermo del Toro's Cabin of Curiosities was really good. A bunch of mediocre Marvel stuff were bits and pieces I liked, but nothing I really loved. She-Hulk, Miss Marvel, Moon Knight. I did like Werewolf by Night a lot, as you know. I know you did. And Obi-Wan, like, I'd say about 50% of Obi-Wan I really liked. And the other half was filler, you know, stretched it out. And that's it. Simon, did you see anything on those lists that you liked or didn't like? Or?
Dragons. But I'll mention things nobody mentioned. Nobody mentioned Harley Quinn, which I fucking love.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that.
Harley Quinn, I'm enjoying immensely. I think I've mentioned everything else other than this new Netflix show I'm watching called The Recruit.
Mm. Okay, I've heard of it.
Fun. I'm not saying it's amazing. I've watched one episode. I'm kind of in. What I watch this show? I can't remember. I just watch. You guys watch way more TV than I do, so I'm trying to think.
I started watching Treason on Netflix with Charlie Cox, but I didn't finish it.
Oh, there was actually a documentary series I loved, Welcome to Wrexham, about Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds buying the local football club in Wrexham. And
that was awesome.
It's an amazing – I don't care about football at all, but the documentary just goes into the town of Wrexham and how the team supports the local businesses and – it's a wonderful series. Even if you don't like football, it's still high drama, lots of real human drama. And it's funny as hell because Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds are funny as hell. So it highly recommended.
I've been meaning to check that out. It actually reminds me, because I don't think of sports very much, but a sports show that I love was Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers on HBO. Love that show. It's all about you know, basically the purchase of the Lakers and the changing of basketball, and like commercialization and adding cheerleaders and Laker girls and, I can't remember who the basketball, I mean, Kareem is on the play, on the team. Magic Johnson gets drafted in the first one. So it's all backroom dealings as well as athletes and dealing with fame and sponsorships and stuff like that. Really good.
Okay. Can we do movies now?
Yeah. Sure.
Yes.
I've seen movies.
Okay. I know you
have. Not so much.
All right. So you're saying we should stop yelling like a couple of banshees? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly what I'm saying, yes.
All right.
Oh, so before we continue, my friend Jamie says I owe Doug an apology on Black Adam because I didn't let him talk.
I didn't really have anything to say about Black Adam.
No, Jamie had nothing to say. Sorry.
It just wasn't good. But
it was not good, no.
But our first movie of the day will be Banshees of Inisherin.
Of
2022. Well, the first movie we'll review in 2023 came out in 2022.
You know, Kevin, next month is our 16th anniversary of this crazy show.
16th? Really? I thought it was more like 20th.
No, because my daughter's 15th, so we're a year. Maybe it's 15 this year. No, it's 15 this year.
So 15, so that would put it 2008?
Yeah, we started.
No, you know, we started recording when I lived on Castlefield.
Yes.
And I lived there, and I think I moved out of there in 2007.
Oh, so maybe I'm off by here. Maybe it was 16, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to look back. Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, directed by Martin McDonagh, starring Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, Kerry Condon, and Barry Keoghan.
Yes, he's in it.
Yes.
Kevin,
so,
did you catch this one?
I watched it this afternoon.
Where was it? HBO Max?
Disney Plus.
Oh, okay. People are asking where to find it. I don't.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. Okay. It was a Fox release. So you'd probably find it on Hulu.
In the States, it is. It's on HBO Max.
Okay.
So,
that's why I'm probably thinking HBO Max.
Okay.
Interesting.
Do you want to go first
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a strange little movie set in a really remote Irish island where two friends, out of the blue, one day, one of them decides he doesn't want to be friends with the other guy. And that's it. And it lends, and the one guy, Colin Farrell, just, he doesn't understand why Brendan Gleeson doesn't want to be his friend anymore. And so he's just destroyed. And then eventually, you know, he finds out that Brendan decided he was dull and didn't want to, he was dragging him down. And there's maybe like 20 people on this island total, right? So, it just gets kind of weird and Colin won't let it go and he keeps trying to push it. And he's really lost without his friend. And then out of the blue, Brendan says, listen, if you don't stop talking to me, I'm going to cut my finger off one at a time. And he doesn't stop talking to him. And sure enough, one day there's a finger thrown at his door. And the sisters, this is too weird. His one sister lives with him, Colin Farrell, can't handle it anymore. She's got to get away. And the other guy he hangs around with, Barry Keoghan, has a bit of a crush on his sister, even though she's much older. And he's a bit of an idiot. And there's some strange sequences, like the one police officer on the island is Barry's father, and they go to steal alcohol from him, and he's sitting in a chair naked, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's tired after just jerking off. And like he's like, I did not have to see your father naked. And he's like, well, you see my father naked now. And he's like, yeah, but I didn't need to see him naked. Like, why would you bring me here to see that? Anyway, it was just a weird movie, and it just escalates. And there's like an old hag that kind of wanders around going, there's going to be a grave or two graves or whatever for you, and dire portents. And I thought it was beautifully shot, and it was a fascinating landscape. But the movie itself, I didn't get why Brendan Gleeson was so hostile to him. like and then he cuts off more fingers and all that stuff. But I like the bit about, you know, like the donkey that tries to live in the house with them and the sister won't let him. And, like just quirky stuff. I mean, it's a quirky Irish movie. Like there have been a million other quirky Irish movies over the years. Set, and I couldn't figure out when it was actually set. It seemed to me like the '50s or maybe
the '20s. It was like April 1923, I think.
23. Okay. So it was even more remote. So, like if you're looking for something different to watch, I would say it's an okay movie. I've given like a 6 out of 10, but I liked it, but I didn't love it.
See, I'm in the opposite camp. I loved it. I loved everything about this movie. I think Colin Farrell has never been better. I think he's playing against type. You expect him to be the heavy or something, but he's playing a limited character, to quote the movie. Mm-hmm. And I just loved all the conversations about, oh, well, Dominic, he's the most dim. And his sister Siobhan's like, oh yeah, yeah, by a mile. And he's like, all right. So who's the second most dim? And cause he doesn't want to be that, but he is. Yeah. And I mean, and I thought Brendan Gleeson gave such an amazing, subtle performance. Cause when he goes to confession, the priest continually asks him, how's that despair going? And so there's something going on with Brendan Gleeson, and I think it has to do with the Civil War going on. Yeah. My initial thought was maybe he lost a brother or a son to the Civil War, but then talking about it with my family, my wife goes, well, maybe it's just the fact that he sees all these other people out there fighting and dying for a reason, and he's just spending his time on this island having a drink at 2 o'clock with his dim friend talking about his pony shits or whatever. And he wants to leave a mark on the world, which is why he wants to stop having dull conversations and write a song that'll be remembered forever. And I think it's just, I don't know what it is that this movie just really struck a chord with me. I just really enjoyed it. I thought Kerry Condon as Siobhan was amazing. I want them all to win Oscars, except I also want everybody in Everywhere All at Once to win Oscars. So, but that's where my heart is. But I love Banshees of Inisherin. I think it was a really brilliant film.
Okay. First off, Doug, you got that idea about Oscars half right. I'll give it half of that.
Okay.
And it's the Banshees of Inisherin is the half right. This film has so many quirky characters you guys haven't discussed. The woman that runs the post office cracked me up to no end. She's trying to get into everybody's business and nobody's giving her anything.
Yeah.
I thought it was hysterical. The cop getting knocked out by Brendan Gleeson, I was rolling.
Yeah.
Absolutely broke me up. But so the donkey, well, I hate to ruin it, but we do spoil movies. Kevin said you at the beginning, hopefully you did. Yeah. When the donkey has an issue, I'm like, oh, that's game. And he goes to the house and goes, it'd be better if you were in it. Like, this is game on. Yeah. I just think this works well because it's quirky. And I love quirky. And the dialogue is excellent. It always seems to be moving the story. Even if it's just dull things like, I'm sitting at the bar, or you walk in and hear Brendan Gleeson's song. You know things are getting better. They're introducing new things constantly. Mm-hmm. I like how it doesn't wrap up. I didn't want this to wrap up. I kind of like it the way they left it off, that it really didn't finish the story. I'm like, kind of like, okay, I accept that in this one. And just little things like that. Colin Farrell is amazing in this. I do not think he's going to win an Oscar, Doug. I'm sorry. I don't think
it's... No, I after seeing The Whale, I won't tell you what I think of the movie, but I will say it's probably going to Brendan Fraser for The Whale,
which
the Oscar.
I haven't seen yet, but I will probably see my Oscar show. I will have seen The Whale. I just think this film is fun. I like the quick dialogue. I find it moves. I felt bad for Barry Keoghan, what happened to him. I felt like, oh, didn't see that coming. I kind of like that, but it didn't bug me, though. I found it kind of fit the storyline. I thought this world might be a little bit bigger. I was looking for maybe a little bit few more characters, but I think it works because it is so subtle. And they do keep it like a fairy tale. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Like, it's supposed to be a fairy tale, not real.
Kinda. I didn't really view it as a fairy tale. I just kind of saw it as a time before therapy, really. Because, I mean, you could look at Colin Farrell and see he has abandonment issues. Oh, his parents died when he was young. His friend just doesn't want to be a friend anymore. His sister leaves him. That's why he likes animals. Animals love unconditionally, and that's why he wants to bring them all into the house.
Which he does.
Yes. Which is amazing.
He likes his donkey. He doesn't talk back. I get it.
Yeah.
I get what it says. I don't know. I think this film is just wonderful. I think Martin McDonagh does a perfect job with a limited budget. I find a lot of directors now are getting a little bit too much money and making big, gigantic movies that just don't need to exist.
Right.
And I think he does it. I think he did it with Seven Psychopaths. He did it with this, and I can't remember what else he's directed, but I probably like them all. I'm just not really. So anything. So I'm giving this a completely thumbs up. Absolutely must watch for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thumbs up on it. I'm just not as fond of it as Doug.
I'm in Doug's camp. I'm right there. Okay. If there's a train, I'm driving Doug around. 100%.
Nice.
So, Doug, when we're
about
to get to our next film, I was thinking they should have played before. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. And let's get some snacks.
Okay. for the Fablemans?
Yeah, I kind of feel it had that vibe for me.
I could see that. The Fablemans, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Gabriel LaBelle, Michelle Williams, Paul Dano, Seth Rogen, Judd Hirsch, and the maestro himself, David Lynch.
Oh, God, yes, David Lynch.
Yes.
Kevin, you love this movie. I know it.
Yeah, so someone else go first, then.
I will speak, because you know I didn't like it, so I'm going to be honest.
Wow.
I cannot get – I tried hard to like this, guys. I just got to the point. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just saying it wasn't for me. I just thought it was Spielberg just pulling his own chain over and over again. Look how good I was as a kid. Look how good. Oh, better introduce that Jewish issue. I'm like, I don't care. I could not get into this. I just thought it was okay. I know you guys are going to kill me on this, but I got to think. Paul Dano did nothing for me. The parts I found interesting was when he was directing. I did enjoy those scenes. So any scenes that showed him out doing what he does for a living, I was into it. Yeah, the home life didn't interest me. Absolutely never bought into the home life. I didn't mind the high school stuff. But it seemed just very typical high school stuff to me. I'm like, I always feel Spielberg goes one for me, one for them. One for me, one for himself. So his blockbusters I love. His little small movies I don't, other than Sugarland Express I did like. I think that's the one with Goldie Hawn in it, or I got the wrong one.
No, I think you got it right, Sugarland Express.
I did quite like. So, Fablemans is fine. I can see why people love this film. I get it. It's just not a movie I would enjoy, and I'm sure you guys would agree as soon as you saw this. Like, Simon's not going to love this. It's not quirky. It's not suspenseful. It's not intense. It's kind of happy. Everybody's kind of getting along. And I think they telegraphed a big plot point early with Seth Rogen. You kind of saw that early for me. That wasn't a surprise when that happened later. I was like, yeah, I kind of saw that from the first couple of shots. But I really wish we could see Spielberg's earlier stuff as opposed to him filming it now. I'd like to see it. These movies he made, see where it went. Okay. Now I've slagged on it. I will say the last 15 minutes was a work of brilliance. When he goes to
meet George Ford
was absolute with David Lynch, his best performance ever. Absolutely loved that whole part. Fantastic. So There you go. See, that was nice of Fablemans near the end.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought this film was wonderful. I thought it gave, like, just a great insight into Spielberg growing up. I think my favorite part of the whole film was when he is in the car with his father, and his father asks how he got the gunshots in that Western. And you could see his father and him bonding over not necessarily the filmmaking, which the father doesn't really understand, but he understands problem solving and connecting that way, connecting, well, it's a physical thing. I just poked holes in the film to, so the light can go through to show the gunshots. And I think that, that scene to me was the encapsulation of the movie. It's him respecting his father and seeing his father for the first time, really understanding him and what he does. And then later on, Sammy understands the sacrifices his father makes for the family. His father puts himself as the villain in the story, and which is why they broke up. He didn't want the kids to blame the mother, so he took that all on himself. And I think Sammy sees that. And I agree. The ending with David Lynch, I was over the moon for that because I'm a huge David Lynch fan, and I was shocked to find out Lynch and Spielberg were born in the same year. So they're the same age. And I thought this movie was wonderful. It's not my favorite of the year, but it's definitely going to make my top 10. And yeah, I thought it was really wonderful. I thought Spielberg was very open and honest with his family life growing up.
So right now this is sitting near the top or at the top of my list for the year. I love this movie. I'm a big fan of Steven Spielberg's movies in general and his career and his arc, how he came into it. He was like the young auteur. I mean, he really made a name for himself. In a lot of ways, there are parallels between Spielberg and Orson Welles. I think both were sort of savants that really excelled in doing what they were. Although Spielberg was film and Welles was the stage. But I think it was very interesting because I think it was more than just understanding his father. It was understanding his mother and his father. And where they were coming from, because like on the surface, there's no reasonable explanation for why these two clicked. And the interesting part of it too is that they did reunite and remarried, and they're still together right to the end, his mother and his father. So the she leaves to be with the Seth Rogen character, but that's temporary. Eventually they do reunite because the love is there. Like it's just that. She could not handle the stress of relocation, and the father was a thinker. He was definitely a planner, logician type that did not necessarily connect with people. Which is why he did connect with his son over the planning and the science of poking holes in films and. Eventually doing squibs and little things where you'd step on a board and it would look like a bullet explosion behind you and stuff. Like just the logic of thinking through a problem and figuring out a way to make it work, instead of just relying on the same things. I loved it. I thought it looked great. I loved the visit with Judd Hirsch, the mysterious stranger that was I love the grandmothers fighting. They were hilarious, and I thought the sisters were fun. I mean, there's that scene with the camping scene where the mother's dancing in front of the car light, and the one sister's like, "Mom, you can see everything. Stop doing that." You know, that's very awkward. But he saw art through his mother, and he saw science through his father, and logic. And so he's really the child of both. But you would think on the surface that he was more like the mother. But in the reality, he was probably more like the father. But he understands his world view of art and music and literature and everything like that came from the mother. So I thought it was interesting. Like, where does this come from? My one criticism is, why is it not calling it the Fablemans when it's so obviously him and it's so obviously based on his life? And heck, there's whole movies that I watched a documentary. I bought the film, obviously, and there's a documentary where he's talking about recreating his own movies shot for shot. And he said, I had to consciously try not to improve on what I did as a teenager, because that's what I would do now. I would say, I figured out how to make it better. I've done Saving Private Ryan. I know how to do the D-Day Band. But to go back and look at the things that I did as a kid, watching those old movies and trying to recapture doing them on film, I had to not outdo myself, my younger self. I was fighting with my younger self, essentially, to make these scenes. And I love that the fact that he completely subverts the whole high school class that didn't know what to think of him and all that stuff. And he ended up doing that holiday report that just completely changed things. And I love the scene too with the girl, let's pray, I want to pray to Jesus. He's like, oh yeah. So, you know, just little things like that. And then I'm topping it all up is that visit with John Hughes, which is just fantastic. What do you see in this picture? You know, is it interesting to you? Well, what's it all about? They're just looking. Says, all right, what's so interesting about it? The horizon line is at the bottom. Yes. What about this one? Horizon line's at the top. What about this one? Horizon signs in the English. It's boring. If it's so, note yourself. If the horizon line's at the top, it's interesting. If it's at the bottom, it's interesting. But in the middle, boring. Stay away from the middle. And that little bit where he walks out. And he's like just on high on the experience. And then Spielberg's like, oh shit, I better move the level to make it interesting. That was a nice touch. I like that. So I really enjoyed it. As a person who loves movies, and I'm trying to understand the artist, this was a peek inside Spielberg's brain.
Is this, or is this a vanity project?
I don't think it was. I think he wrote it with someone. So I think he felt he had a story to tell about his mother and his father. Really. Not, he's a character in it, but it ends up being about him because he's relating his experiences, right? But he's trying to understand why his mother did certain things and father. Why was he so hurt by his mother's betrayal of the father and discovering that she was cheating? And that it was through the movies that he discovered that she was cheating too, right? It wasn't like there was something he'd only see through the movies that he couldn't see in real life that was right in front of him. So, and then the story with the monkey was true as well. That's all based on things that happened to him. So, I don't know.
I think at this stage in Spielberg's career, he could do anything he wants. I mean, yeah. He made West Side Story because he always wanted to make a musical. He made this story because I heard, what if I don't get to make another movie? What if COVID-19 really is the end of everything? Mm-hmm. If I had one movie left to tell, what is the one story I want to do? And it was the story of his family, the story mm-hmm. of his life. So.
Like, I would love to see part two. I would love to see how did he get started in Hollywood? I would love to see him. How does he get his first film roles? What's it like directing Night Gallery? You know, that kind of thing. And then doing Jaws. I mean, Jaws could be a movie unto itself. The making
that is true.
So,
I think his next thing is Bullet. I think he's doing Bullet now with Bradley Cooper.
Right. Yeah. Bradley Cooper, Steve McQueen. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're talking self-proclaimed Steve McQueen fanatics, so.
That is fair.
I did like Steve McQueen's appearance in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That was nice, yeah. At the Playboy Mansion. All right, what's next?
Oh, something you wanted.
Next, we got the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, directed by James Gunn, starring Pom Klempief, Dave Bautista, Kevin Bacon, and Chris Pratt. there are other people in it, but their roles were so small that I didn't include them.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Voice of Bradley Cooper and
Karen Gillan for a line or two.
Doug, you want to go first? You want me to just pan this thing because I hated it so much?
I'll go first. I thought it was kind of a fun way to spend an hour around Christmas. It was definitely a lot of fun. I thought it was kind of slight in a way, and I was kind of upset that one of the major plot points is from a deleted scene in Guardians Volume 2.
What? Whoa, check this up. What am I missing?
It was revealed that Mantis is his sister, is Star-Lord's sister, in a deleted scene for Guardians Volume 2.
Yeah, if you bought the Guardians 2 DVD or Blu-ray or iTunes, whatever, there was a deleted scene that they quickly removed. But it basically had Drax and Mantis sitting outside. And Mantis reveals that Ego is her father as well.
Hold on. So I own the DVD. It's on there?
I think it's on there. If you look.
So this already gave it away. You look in the, I've seen it.
Yeah, you would have known the surprise, but I don't think that's the be-all and end-all of the show. I think it was a nice touch.
The whole emotional part at the end kind of hint that, though, I think, with Star-Lord finding out about it, I just kind of wish that they had included, because watching the show with my wife, she's like, all right, I must not have seen the second Guardians film. Like, no, you did. You were in the theater with us. That just wasn't mentioned in that movie at all.
Yeah. Well, actually, the scene when he goes by the panoramas of himself having sex with all the different alien women, one of them is a woman of Mantis's race. So the implication being that Mantis was the other child that survived. She was useful to him, so he kept her around as opposed to the others that he killed. She couldn't bond with the celestial element of him, but the emotional manipulation was definitely a tool that he needed. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, other than that, like I said, it was a fun hour to spend. The music was catchy. You could actually download the old 87s, I Don't Even Know What Christmas Is song. So, yeah, it was fun, just slight. Is how I'd describe it.
Pretty much in line with Marvel. Right? Fun, but generally slight. Simon, you look distraught.
Oh, my God. How is this fun? Dave Bautista is a terrible actor, annoys me in everything. Listening to Drax talk for 45 minutes and then hanging out with Mantis, who I also find equally as boring. I'm like, the three characters I like weren't here. I love Star-Lord. I love Rocket. I love the guy with the fin on his head, but I think he died.
Well, he was there in the beginning. Yondu was there in the animated flashback.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I like those. But I mean, you take the two characters I find boring as crap. And I'm not a Guardians fan. We know that. And I'm like, oh, my God, really? Kevin Bacon? We're picking. I got to listen to Kevin. I'm like, oh. And I'm like, oh, crap, Kevin Bacon's going to play a song. I just knew it. And then Kevin Bacon shows up. I'm like, this song is terrible. No wonder the Bacon brothers have become nothing. Star-Lord looks as bored as I am. Groot's at least kind of interesting. And Rocket's as amusing as always. I just think this was just Marvel TV crap again that you guys make me watch.
Okay.
I don't know how I'm supposed to find this entertaining.
I thought it was fine for what
that's
it was.
Fine.
I wasn't...
That's fine. This is an hour of my time for fine.
It's a Christmas special. It was exactly like most Christmas specials.
Yeah.
You had to discover the meaning of Christmas. There were things that I liked about it. I liked that the Guardians have acquired nowhere. They're trying to turn it into something. I like that Cosmo is there helping out, and we get a little bit more of Cosmo, who will be a bigger role in Guardians 3.
When that's they film on a lunch break?
What's that?
They filmed
it on the set. I mean, I like the bits with Kevin Bacon. Oh, I thought this was a chance for Mantis to shine, and Mantis actually has some great moments when she takes on the police officers, and she struggles to be better. And I think that's because Peter inspires her to be better. She wants to, you know, her normal all be like, Drax, let's kill them.
I much prefer Drax.
Whatever. And I like them getting drunk.
That was okay.
All that stuff and having fun. And, you know, they're at a gay bar basically and they're hitting on Drax. And so, I thought that was funny. And then, you know, your little man and the cane and that stuff. And that was a weird thing, but. Stealing all the Christmas decorations, and it's a nice moment when Peter Quill walks out and all the snow, the fake snow comes down and the Christmas lights all turn on and Groot is running around. I thought Groot looked terrible in that. I thought it just looked like a guy in a suit.
Yeah, that looked weird.
Yeah. Buff Groot. And then, but Rocket was great, and, so was, the James Gunn's brother Sean in, Kraglin. And there were nice little moments. I mean, Nebula had some great one-liners. I thought Kevin Bacon was fun in it. So yeah, like overall, for a distraction of what it was fine. I wasn't expecting any revelations or any secrets. And then there were some things that were revealed in it that I wasn't expecting.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, the fact that they can hop in a ship and be on Earth in seconds now, and so Peter Quill can come back at any time. And I like that the trailer for 3 came out right around the same time, so we can see where it's going.
Nope, didn't watch it.
I know you don't watch trailers, so.
Trailers ruin movies. Stop watching them.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're looking for something, it's like Werewolf by Night. Werewolf by Night was a bit slight, but I was entertained by it.
Okay, I'll give you that. I wasn't entertained by this, but I was entertained by Werewolf.
Yeah.
But I'm more afraid. So, I have a question. If I have an onion and it's made of glass, does it make me cry?
No.
Only if you get a shard in your eyeball.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get a shard in my eyeball on this one.
Oh. So I guess we're talking about Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, directed by...
Who was in their bar, Glass Onion? What a terrible bar name. Like, what happened to Regal?
It's the Beatles song.
The Beatles song?
It's a Beatles song. Look into a glass onion.
Is that reference to
about Strawberry Fields?
They played it over the end credits.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was probably bored by that and turned it off. I'm like, okay. I wasn't bored by this movie at all.
Let's see. Directed by Rian Johnson, starring Daniel Craig, Kate Hudson, Jessica Henwick, Edward Norton, Catherine Hahn, Janelle Monáe, Madeline Klein, Dave Bautista, and Leslie Odom Jr.
Okay. They did a good job. Took me 20 minutes to figure out it was Leslie Odom Jr. hidden behind a beard. Like, who is that? I know that guy. I really should know who this is.
Just ignore me. Just ignore me. I'm not here.
You know, guys, what I'm like. I don't even read who's. I just don't even read who's in movies half the time. I like surprises. I'm like, this movie is perfect at the beginning. Oh my god, that opening 15 minutes was absolutely fantastic. The way it introduced everybody,
mm-hmm.
I thought was picture perfect. Just boom, 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 boom. Introduce everybody. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked it. I like when Hugh Grant opened the door. Mm-hmm. It was, oh, thank you. So, is Benoit Blanc gay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. I was just asking. I thought he was. I took it that they were living together.
Yeah.
That's fine. Good for him. So then they go to the island, but I love how they got rid of the COVID in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, right. They just got a shot. Like, yeah.
That worked out well. And that was a beautiful place wherever they filmed. That was like stunning.
Yeah, so actually the place is up for sale apparently.
Oh, okay. So they mentioned it then.
It's only like $43 million or something.
I'll just take that out of the bank this week and pick that up for us. You can have the extra features studios there.
There you go.
Where is that place? Is it really in Greece?
Yeah, I don't know where it is, but yeah.
No, I have no idea where it is.
Well, absolutely breathtaking. I don't want to ruin the end of this, so I love the whole setup where they're discussing the murder mystery. I knew he was going to solve it in 30 seconds. That made me laugh. But, I mean, I feel she steals this movie so many times.
It is Greek, and it is $450 million for the whole island.
Okay.
26 acres.
That might be a stretch. $43 million, I might be able to do. $450 million, we might have to pull some resources, guys. So I thought Kate Hudson was the star of this movie. Really thought Kate Hudson just looked fabulous. Dave Bautista is just doing the Dave Bautista. And, funny side note, Dave Bautista's girlfriend, whoever her name is in the movie. My daughter
Whiskey.
Watched, goes, wait a second, that's a chick from Outer Banks. Like, isn't it? I'm like, oh, my God, it is. My daughter picked her off in 2 seconds when she walked in the room. So I think this is fun. I think it has some great twists and turns in it. Had some things I did not know were coming. I kind of liked it. I only have one big complaint. I thought the ending was silly. Okay?
Okay.
When they find a piece of evidence and didn't deal with it, and then I'm just like, this is dumb. And they do, and a certain character does stop. I'm like, I disagreed with that. I just thought it was a little too silly for me. For what it was, I just didn't think it worked for the storyline. I liked everything up until the last 20 minutes.
Mm.
I was on board. The last 20 minutes, the kind of thing. But no, I thought Benoit Blanc was fun. I thought everybody was good. I thought Jessica Henwick was kind of wasted. But I think she's just here to not do much. She doesn't really do much. But no, I liked all the stuff, the turnarounds, the shotting. I love the location. So a positive watch, just didn't like the ending.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this movie was fun from start to finish. Maybe it has something deeper to say about wealth and power, but I kind of just had fun watching a mystery full of assholes who you want to be guilty. This might be a controversial take. I probably had more fun watching this at home on Netflix than I did when I saw it in the theater after Thanksgiving.
Now I have to ask why.
Oh, well, after Thanksgiving, Owen and I went to go see it. Nobody else came with us. But watching it at home, we watched it with all the family, and we were free to just let my son Dylan was shouting out, oh, okay, I think the killer is, and he was able to give his thoughts out loud while watching it.
How did that make you feel when you know who the killer is?
I just kept my mouth shut.
Well,
I was like,
a problem that you wish you could have relived your experience and given you an idea? Okay, I was going to watch it now. Did you have the killer right?
No, absolutely not.
Neither did Kevin?
No, I mean, because it's, I mean, I'll get into that when I review it, but the whole subversion of expectations thing that
absolutely.
Ryan Johnson loves is that, I mean, it's, they're there for a murder mystery, but that's solved in 2 seconds, the plan. And so then, Benoit sets it up that there could be a murder, potentially. And then we learn that there is a murderer, but like, it's not the completely subverts it, that it's the victim that was in fact the instigator.
So, and I will say, seeing it twice, it does play fair. If you know whose hands to watch, and you watch their hands.
You know the ending. You totally can't believe you missed those things.
Yeah, but it does play fair. It does play fair and does what Blanc says at the end.
Absolutely, I agree with you, but I'm like, so pissed I missed it.
So, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I think the whole glass smashing stuff at the end was a little bit too over the top for
me.
But that's typical. Like, I like Rian Johnson's movies aside from one. And,
Return of the Jedi?
Last Jedi.
Yeah, which I love.
Last Friday is just so terrible.
But I disagree.
Awful movie.
Disagree.
Awful movie.
Disagree.
On every level.
Nope.
Okay. Worst Star Wars movie after Phantom Menace.
No.
Although Rise of Skywalker is pretty bad too.
Yep.
But Last Jedi is terrible. That's the baton. Anyway, I don't want to talk about Last Jedi. It's a piece of shit. You know, you disagree, but whatever. You're wrong. this one was okay. I mean, I like the characters. I like where it was going. Yeah, Kate Hudson was great. You know, what's his name? Oh my God. Well, Daniel Craig's always great in this role, but, Edward Norton, I thought he was really good. Catherine Hahn, I thought was a bit wasted. Janelle Monáe was really good in it. Jessica Henwick, again, why are you here? Just to show that you're good. I don't know, like, Whiskey was just there for the eye candy.
Hey, nothing wrong with Whiskey's eye candy.
Batista was okay. I liked Leslie Odom Jr. I liked the little bits, the little cameos, like the Benoit's on a murder mystery board with consulting with Angela Lansbury and other people. Natasha Lyonne and then like random stuff like the the party that at the beginning when we meet Kate Hudson's character, Yo-Yo Ma just pops in and explains something randomly. Like,
that was great.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a second, that's Yo-Yo Ma. Yeah,
we gotta know that's Yo-Yo Ma. The joke doesn't work as well.
Exactly. And you know, Stevens,
the conference call at the beginning with Kareem and Natasha Lyonne and Angela Lansbury. I don't know who the fourth one was.
Sondheim.
Sondheim. Yeah. All in one call. You're like, there's so many cameos in here.
Yeah. So I say, you know, it's okay. I mean, it's on Netflix. So if you've got Netflix, you're not losing anything watching it.
Well, it was worth $379 million.
As an attention getter for Netflix, sure. Netflix has been losing share, so they needed a big picture to draw people back in, I think. I'm not sure this is it, but, I mean, they're canceling. Well, they have lots of franchises. I mean, Stranger Things is the big thing for them, but
that's
and The Crown. But anything new that they launch, they cancel. I guess they're going to try to keep The Witcher going. Witcher Blood Origin just debuted. I haven't watched that. And then, you know, now Henry Cavill's off and being replaced by Chris Hemsworth's brother as Gevalta de Rivera.
Never seen that episode. Sorry, Doug, did you get to talk everything you wanted to about Glass Onion?
Yes. Yes, I did.
The audience is watching. They're going to make sure you get cut if you get caught up.
Have you seen Friday Night, Kevin?
I have not seen it.
I think we can do Violent Night then.
Thanks. All right. So Violent
Night. Violent Night, Christmas Eve there, Doug?
I did have a Violent Night, actually. Oh, all right. Directed by Tommy Wirkola, starring David Harbour, John Leguizamo, Alex Hassel, Beverly D'Angelo, and Alexis Lauder.
Oh, great Alexis Lauder.
Yes.
He was fabulous.
I thought everybody in this movie was good. I just had a lot of fun with it. It was a big, goofy action film, and I enjoyed it. I actually really want to see a prequel to this. Spoiler alert, I want to see how a Viking barbarian warrior becomes Santa Claus. I want that backstory. That's the biggest thing that I left this movie with. I want to see the prequel.
Well, I think you're leaving out a lot, but okay. I think this has some twists and turns it shouldn't have had in. I really think there's lots of stuff here I did not see coming. And I found it was enjoyable, surprisingly very enjoyable.
So are you saying you haven't seen Die Hard 2 then?
I have seen Die Hard 2. That's what this movie is. I know it's Die Hard 2, but it's got some good kills in it.
Yes.
I really like the kills. Yes, it is Die Hard 2, but light. Version. But John Leguizamo's fun. Beverly D'Angelo looks like they're hamming it up quite nicely. They got how much they can take their characters. David Harbour as the drunk Santa was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. I mean, where did you go wrong with the things going up the chimney? I just thought they played that well and you knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it was fun. I mean, does it have flaws? Absolutely. They're all over the place. But I didn't care. I was having a good time.
No, it was a lot. I think my favorite scene was probably the quote-unquote realistic Home Alone, where you see the damage that that stuff would actually do.
Oh, for sure.
I think that was real. When the nail went through the guy's jaw, that the whole family just cringed, but in that fun way.
It kind of hung off as he watches him, his whole family. My family has nothing to do with me. It's leave me alone to watch my movie. Actually, I lied. My wife did Glass Cross.
Okay.
And no, I think this is just a fun movie. There's really not much to say about it. Kevin would like it. I think Kevin would enjoy this.
I like the premise. I didn't realize that he was actually Santa Claus.
Yeah, yes. It's kind of weird, but there's some funny jokes as him and Santa. My favorite when he goes to the guy's house and takes the six-pack.
Okay.
I think it's out of the fridge. He, like, drops presents. You see him constantly taking alcohol from people's houses.
Yeah.
It was just funny things like that. I mean, it's really diehard as Santa, just diehard light.
Yeah.
I mean, the film, I don't know, I think it needs a bigger budget. I think it kind of needs a sequel or a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, I'd be fine with it. I think everybody does their job in this movie, which is kind of nice.
Yeah,
they're really not trying to push what they're not in. Even though I'm shocked John Leguizamo is still working, but that's okay. He looks good.
He was great in The Menu, which was also from this year.
Maybe we're having a Leguizamonance. Anything?
Oh,
not this week.
Is it because, Doug, there's no sale on or anything?
Kind of, and, you know, I have to spend money on other people for Christmas and
I don't think I
got
anything in my mail, though. I looked, and there was no present from Doug this year.
I'm sorry. Must have got lost in the mail.
Yeah, blame those mailmen. Must have stole it. Kevin, did you buy anything?
All right. Yes, recently purchased movies. Tom Cruise, War of the Worlds. The Replacements. Blade Runner 2049, Yes Man, Confess Fletch, The Northman, Bullet Train, and The Fablemans.
Nice.
So
okay, we're out of here. First podcast of the year is done, but it'll be released probably near the end of the month. Doesn't matter. If they make it,
we'll watch it.
Yeah.